Store's closed, mister.
I'm not here for cigarettes or bubblegum, my boy. Can you tell me the name of the person who records the podcast over there and where I might find him?
Francisco Ruiz. And you're looking at him.
Francisco Ruiz. Ha
ha. Who are you?
PaulJPowers.com is the name, and I'm here to co-host on this episode of the Retro Rewind Podcast.
Thunder Road 3 now online. How can I help you travel through movie space-time today? Course entered. The Last Starfighter, 1984. Is this correct? Course set. Rewinding in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome, Rewinders and new listeners, to the Retro Rewind Podcast, where we take a fresh look at movies and games from 15 or more years ago. I'm your captain of the former pod, now the TR3, Francisco Ruiz, and I'm joined by your ex-own mind, Paul, the PaulJPowers.com Starfighter Powers.
Hear that, you slimes? I'm famous.
Also, for this discussion of the film The Last Starfighter, we welcome back aboard Communications Chief Deborah Powers. Hey, Deb.
Hey.
Hello. And in addition to that, we are glad to have back aboard hosts of the podcast Who Will Save Generation X trivia game show, Jason Zabe Zabo. Hey, Zabe.
Just Zabe. Thanks.
That's what I'm yes, I know. Just Zabe. That's not like
you need to get
movie.
Formal. Although I do want a rank eventually on this podcast.
If you are on the show one more time, you will get a rank. So
sweet. If I'm on also, five more times, do I get a free sub?
No, but you'll get another rank. So right, that's worth something.
But be careful what you wish for.
And finally, we welcome back appreciator of music and movies and music and meter of the famous, Suzanne Sabo. Hey, Suzanne.
Hey, how you doing?
Glad you're here. I'm doing well to answer your question. Ben, glad you're here, Suzanne. And now they have a quick flyby of who we are. Paul, can you give us a quick overview of the production specs for The Last Starfighter?
Yeah, sure. All right.
Not the NES game. Cutting you off of the past. Not the NES game. This is the movie.
Okay. Well, no, because the movie's not old enough. That's why I did the TV show of Avatar, The Last Airbender.
Paul.
Came out February 25th.
The Last Star. Fighter, not airbender.
Stars are in the air. They fight. There's fighters.
I think stars are technically in space. They're not really in the air. There's space is vacuum.
See, now what we have here is a failure to communicate.
That could have been brought to my attention yesterday.
Fine. You want the movie The Last Starfighter?
Yes.
Go back.
Give me that.
Watch it. All right. The Last Starfighter was released July 13th, 1984. Not the NES game, right?
No.
The movie.
The movie, yes.
Oh, good. All right. Because I've never played the game because it's not as good as the movie.
Ooh.
At least the game in the movie, it looks. Anyway, the movie runs an hour and 40 minutes. It is rated PG. It is directed by Nick Castle. It was written by Jonathan Betuel. I don't know.
Bet you out.
Sorry, Jonathan. Sure.
Sure.
With lead stars being Lance Guest, Dan O'Hurley, Catherine Mary Stewart, Robert Preston, and a few others you may or may not recognize, with music composed by Craig Safon. And are you ready for the box office trivia?
I am ready. Zabe, Suzanne, Deb, are you all ready to guess?
We're ready.
Awesome. And then anyone live here in chat, I saw Babo and Yoshi here earlier. You're welcome to join as well. Go for it, Paul.
All right, The Last Starfighter was made for about $15 million and earned over $22 million at the box office.
All right, not terrible.
Yeah. But given this fact, how high in the box office do you think it ranks among the movies released theatrically in 1984? We'll go with the top 50.
Top 50. Okay, let's start with Deb. What is your guess?
25,
right in the middle. Suzanne, how about you?
I will go with 14.
Okay. Zabe, yourself?
$1, Bob.
Okay. Wow.
Right.
Oh, sorry.
Different game. So I'm going to go higher. I'm going to go 32.
Oh, 32. Okay. I thought you were actually committing to the one. I'm like, all right.
I was about to say, Indiana Jones, the Temple of Doom could suck it.
I am going to go with, I'm going to go with, Bobo guesses 15. Oh, okay. I was going to go with Bobo's standard answer of 42. So Paul, where did the last Starfire actually turn out to be in the top 50?
Well, according to the-numbers.com, the last Starfighter came in at 46.
46?
So you stole Bobo's prize, Captain.
Good Take job. That, Bobo. I'm sorry. Thank you for being here, Bobo.
Don't apologize.
Awesome. Thank you for those factoids, Paul. And let's see if any of them factor into our memory mind meld or subsequent roundtable discussion, which we'll get into once Alice's locate. Once Travis is located, old habits die hard. Once Travis is located, our target film.
Alert. Alert. Target located. Spoilers incoming. Establishing analysis factor.
Every night, Alex Rogan dreams of going far away.
You really are leaving here, aren't you?
Tonight, he will go further than he ever dreamed.
Welcome to Rylos, my boy.
He's one in a million.
Alert, we are under attack.
But the odds against him are a million to one. Alex Rogan is the last Starfighter, rated PG. Starts Friday at select theaters. Check newspapers for locations.
Yeah, go check those newspapers because we have a one in a million shot of remembering anything about this movie. Okay, maybe probably more than that. But it'll be interesting to see what memories our memory mind melt synopsis came up with as we try to remember this movie. Trailer Park Boy is awesome at a Starfighter video game while his little brother Lewis was super excited, commenting on every shot when Alex broke the record, which is really a galactic recruitment tool. Boy leaves home to go to be a Starfighter while his creepy clone stays back and laughs maniacally. The beta unit that replicates Alex is 100% nightmare fuel. With all the other Starfighters dead, Alex and Gung Ho Armadillo perform the greatest finishing move with the Death Blossom to win victory over the Kirk Cobain Armada. Wow. As the music swells in the end, seeing Alex save the galaxy, get both the Gunstar and the girl at the end convinced me that playing video games is the most worthwhile activity anyone can ever do. And I stand by that today. Wow. I mean, I think that was right on, except there's no Kurt Cobain in this. This isn't Nirvana. So clearly our memories were decepted. But based on those memories, as flawed as they were, what rain did they lead you to predict for this film before you rewatched it? Classic, nostalgic, or tragic? Let's begin with Suzanne this time. What was your prediction, Suzanne?
My prediction was classic.
Classic, all right.
Yep.
Deb, how about you?
Classic.
Classic. Zabe, what was your prediction?
100% classic.
100% wow. Classic? And Paul, how about you?
I've watched this many times growing up.
Tragic. Okay.
At least a dozen times, without exaggerating, at least. And each time I enjoyed it, some more than the others. So I predicted classic.
All right. For me, I apparently am not as up on
everybody else is doing it. Come on, Francisco.
I already wrote it down before I watched it, so I predicted nostalgic. I remember thinking it was probably gonna be pretty good. I remember liking it probably last time I saw it, but it wasn't like, oh my gosh, let me go watch this, like I wanted to see Back to the Future again or something like that. So it'll be interesting to see if those memory or if those predictions pan out. But first, let's get into the things we liked most about The Last Starfighter. Let's boot up our
best bits.
And I'm actually going to start with Zabe this time. What's one thing you liked about The Last Starfighter?
Well, first off, one of the things that made it classic, I think, just if I can expound on that just a little bit.
Okay.
What's that?
But not your classic maker.
Not my classic maker. Okay, I'll skip it. Whatever. Okay, here's my first thing. Is the music in this movie is just awesome.
Yeah.
I think if they didn't go for this huge epic theme for this one, then it surely would take away from how great this movie is, in my opinion.
So the music, the movie wouldn't do as well as, say, if a song sounded like... kind of... right in there. No? Okay, just check.
At least I knew it was coming that time. I could tell how you were setting it up, Paul. Most times you get me. You get me like I'm like, what? Stabbing my neck.
Paul, I will support that music in a scene in this movie when Grig is showing his 6,000 younglings. If that music was playing in the background, that'd be perfect.
Yes, I agree. Yeah. 100%.
True story.
Love it.
You know what? I'll comment real briefly on the music. It grew on me as I watched the movie. As it started, I'm like, this is so hokey. And then as it went, I enjoyed it more and more and more. So, Craig Safon, you got me. You got me, okay?
Well, Craig Safon is no John Williams.
That's true.
But it does give you the John Williams vibe, I think.
Yeah.
This movie is like they were really going for it.
It also reminded me of Masters of the Universe, Bel Conte's sort of score of that. Felt similar, but
I remember watching the behind the scenes or retrospect interviews, and I think somebody mentioned they couldn't afford John Williams, but they did the best they could.
Wow.
I know. I think
he did great.
Yeah.
Even not being John Williams, he did. It's such a memorable theme, so that even if you haven't seen it in a while, the second that you hear it again, you're like, oh my gosh, I so remember this.
Yeah, instantly recognizable.
And yes. In fact, I think it was Greg Savon who said that. He was trying to go for that John Williams big orchestra feel.
Well, can you imagine Star Wars without that score from John Williams?
No, I don't want to.
I can't imagine this movie without his score. So he achieved his John Williams-esque performance in that it's very memorable and irreplaceable.
That I'll say that seems like a fun like film student project or something where someone takes a score from, let's say, I don't know, Battle Beyond the Stars or some movie that is a lesser sci-fi movie and putting it on top of Star Wars, like actually trying to match like where the climax or this is the sad part and actually try to see how different the movie feels with a subpar score.
So you're talking musically, you want to do what people say visually, like lightsabers makes everything better. You're saying John Williams' score makes everything better. I agree with that.
I think Steven Spielberg says John Williams' score makes everything better.
Yeah, I agree.
But enough John Williams. Suzanne, was the music something you liked as well? It sounded like it was, but was there something?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The music was something I like. Actually, so just it's not one of my likes or it specifically, but just as a side note, the very first thing that I wrote when taking my notes for the movie was, can we talk about the music yet? That was the first thing that I wrote.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that you guys got that out of the way because, yes, that's is huge significance.
So what was something you liked, though, that made your like list?
So one of the first things that struck me this time, watching it as an adult versus watching it as a kid, which was one of the reasons why I feel like it leans towards classic already just from Jump Street, I really loved the community of the trailer park.
Yeah.
I really loved how they were towards each other. I didn't notice that as a kid. Mm. I didn't know that Alex was willing to help and that they all talked to each other and that they were all friendly and that there was such a sense of community and that it extended beyond just like friendly neighborhood stuff, because the moment when Alex was like going for the record, the fact that like Otis called everybody up and that they came, and this is a video game, the teenager playing a video game. Which one of your grandparents would hop off of their chairs to come watch you play a video game as you beat a record? Like, just the fact that they would do that and make the effort and that they
and
were genuinely excited.
Yeah.
And like the women were like, the command ship, you know, like that was great. You know, and I was really touched by that. I thought that that was super beautiful and significant. I loved that sense of community and the happiness that they all kind of had and how they were like interconnected, and that it was meaningful, that you can genuinely tell that they care about each other.
Were you going to say something?
I'm going to disagree with you, Sudan, on that. Granny, leave me alone and let me play my video games, all right? I don't need to be fixing your stove or putting an antenna on your trailer park.
Yeah, rig. But Zave, when Otis calls,
you gonna bust the record.
You gotta come.
All right, I stand corrected. Never mind. I withdraw my comment.
On the subject of the arcade game real quick, I'll say my first like, which is kind of minimal, but I really liked how the arcade cabinet and the actual game visuals that we see in the Starfire video game looks like an authentic video game like you would see at the time. It has the right sounds. It's not like playing Pac-Man sounds or something else. It's actually playing, I assume, sounds that were made for this actual game. The only thing I'm a little unsure of, or is a little bit takes me out, is that I don't think back then they could have like actual like voice vocal harmonics come through like they did with Robert Preston reading Starfighter. That seemed a bit like
reading Starfighter.
Yeah, I don't think you could really have that back then. Maybe you could. I don't know.
When did Dragon's Lair come out?
That was later.
Prepare for blast off.
You know what? Let me look that up. That's a great point. When did Dragon's Lair?
That's the first video game I remember of having an actual voice.
1983?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but face, Last Starfire was probably filmed before that, so yeah.
No,
they made Dragon Slayer a different way. They
right,
made it
it's made,
they
us made based it a on disc, right.
Any other, yeah. So
was Last Starfire.
That could be accurate. No, it was graphically, it looked more similar
okay,
to
Francisco,
the time. I think your point is correct.
Francisco, your qualm with the video game is that it had audio coming out of it, not that it could shoot light effects out that will disappear that assassin's disguise, will shoot out from the screen and like wipe away the Zandozan's.
That is
disguise.
A good point, Zave. It's actually an alien video game, so it could have extra like panache.
Well, right.
Other things could.
Well,
off-world.
Obviously, it's a homing beacon too. It's a homing. It calls.
Yeah,
it's a whatever so we need this to do right now. Arcade, that's what
right.
It is.
He had to put extra money in it to get it in before Christmas too. So
exactly.
He spared no expense.
But what I need right now is what I'd like to have spared no expense. Okay, I'm just searching for a segue and not finding one. Deb, what is your first like?
I also music was among my likes, but. The cast, I think it was so well done. And I saw some of the behind the scenes filming, and they talked about how Lance Guest had that boyish face, but yet a seriousness because he wanted to get out of that trailer park and do something with his life. And I think, and his girlfriend was cast so well, and Otis and you know, all the characters, I think they hit gold on that.
Awesome, yes. Paul, was the cast something that made your like list, or was there something else?
Absolutely. Everyone in the cast was great. It made it believable. This could be a far-fetched movie if you have the wrong actors who can't portray... I mean, even the aliens, like, you don't even know some of their names, but the way they played it so real or authentic that I thought the entire cast did a great job of this.
I agree with that. I really agree that if others were left to fill these roles, especially Alex's role, I think it would not have had as much gravity. I think that Lance Guest really brought some seriousness to it, but just enough, like not too much where it felt cheesy or like it was reaching, but also not too little. So I think it was great. It really was.
He played grounded really well, I would say. Just like, everything about his performance was, I think, really, really well done. Paul, what was something you thought was well done about this film?
Again, I'm going to go for my number two is the practical effects. This is a highlight for me. It's the highlight of the 80s Creature Shop, which they are well known for. All the variety of aliens. They're fun. Each one of them very different than the other. And even like when the beta unit gets shot in the stomach and then like that green ooze spits out, I thought that worked very well. That was very convincing, even today's standards, I think. So I think they did a great job on most of the practical effects, I'll say.
I'm curious, did the practical effects make anyone else's like list and in the number two spot?
Meaning if it's your number one, save it.
Well, I noticed that the as far as practical effects go, they had the Star Trek GNDN apparatus in the hangar in Rylos.
Oh, really?
Remember that thing that has just the lights that kind of go back and forth?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You'll see that in like almost every Star Trek movie. They call it the GNDN because it stands for goes nowhere, does nothing.
But it looks cool.
Yeah.
But it looks cool.
Are you
if you see it, you'll see it. You'll notice it. Once you know what you're looking for, you'll see it in so many different sci-fi flicks.
What was that you said, Deb?
I said to Zane, are you a Trek fan? I have to ask.
I love Star Trek. I love Star Wars. So I love them both.
Deb is a very big sci-fi. Star Trek fan. So I think
I'm a big Star Trek fan, but I like Star Wars too.
Yeah.
Very cool.
It did make my list. You asked if it had made anyone else's list. Absolutely. Actually, what I wrote down was the cinematography / look and feel / casting, like all of the way that it all looked. So it did. It made my list.
Yeah. And for me, a subsection of the practical effects, I thought the makeup of all the aliens, though sometimes some of them were a little stiff, like the the collection of Starfires, I guess. I don't know, the ones, the recruits that I guess played an arcade game somewhere in their own universes. Some of them, I liked the variety. Some of them felt a little stiff. Like there's this one guy that he like pokes his head up and just moves his neck and his face doesn't really move at all. But I still appreciate it.
Wow. Especially when we get to make fun of others that are different from you, Francis.
When we talk about characters like Grig or the Lord Cobb, I forget not Zur, but the general or the admiral that's right under Zur. That's like, I can't believe I'm having to listen to Zur right now. That guy.
Oh yeah, the Codan.
Yeah, the Codan.
Krill.
Thank you. Yes. I thought their makeups were so. I mean, I was like, wow, this is. I am so shocked. I can see facial expressions through that. What were you gonna say, Zabe?
I just got the only problem with the Codan are the inconsistencies. So you got the general and his lieutenant, and they look like, I don't know, humans that have been dipped in lava or something. But all the underlings, they have like these weird like antenna eyes, and they're like whole other like species of people. Like it's inconsistent on the Codan, but yeah, Grig makes up for all of it, I think. Yeah. You can't even recognize Dan O'Hurley in whatever you call him, called him the iguana, I think he calls him at one point.
Yeah. Although Gung Ho Armadillo is a great name too.
Yeah, that's pretty iconic. I would have gone with turtle, maybe, like tortoise.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but the makeup on that is outstanding.
Let's go to Deb next. What's something else you liked about The Last Starfighter?
Okay, this is kind of a this is a personal thing that no one else will relate to. But one of the reasons it's one of my favorite movies is because of Alex and Maggie's relationship. Because my own husband and I started dating in the last half of our senior year, and they were facing, you know, what are we going to do with our futures and how are we going to stay together? And we love each other so much. And, you know, all that goes with that. And they really loved each other. And so I just relived those days over.
That's so sweet. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, so that's awesome that you're able to relate so well to that.
And And it seemed so real. The story seemed so real with the mother concerned with her son, that is he going to get into the college that he needs to, and him being so disgusted with the high schoolers that they're acting so immature and crazy, and when there's more to life than just, you know, going to the beach or the movies or whatever. So very, very relatable, I thought.
Awesome. I think that leaves Zabe for your next, like, before we get to classic makers.
Well, I was focusing more on the co-stars rather than the main stars, but I think we touched on most of it. The actors really brought everything to life. So
This is everyone's very kind way of saying, Francisco, you need to keep better track of where we are on the show. So I appreciate your guys' kindness in that. Then let's get to classic makers, guys. Let's start with Deb. What's your favorite thing about The Last Starfighter?
The humor.
The humor, really? Okay.
Yeah. I like all the lines, like when he calls them the iguana, and Lewis's various lines, and
crap off.
go back to sleep, Lewis, or tell Mom about your Playboys. Just there were just enough light moments to lift it, I think.
Absolutely, yes. Suzanne, what was your classic maker?
So mine is very general. It's a little bit nonspecific. What I really love about the movie is it's what I would describe its entertainment value. The fact that when you watch it, you just have a good time. It's so fun. There's so much to it that is like upbeat and positive and fun, but adventurous also. And there is some risk. There's some danger. You know, there's even a little death, right? In actually a lot of death, but a lot of death.
Death is an antiquated term. I prefer fighting evil in another dimension.
Yeah,
right. Or Centauri's, Centauri's quote about that was really great too. That, you know,
shuts himself down while his body repairs himself.
Right. Well, he's basically like, oh, like he like waves off death, like, oh, I essentially like, I don't believe it. It's just you go someplace else, like another, you know, it's just another level of functioning someplace else. So I don't know. Even with all of that, I just think that it's so entertaining. It's so fun. And for me personally, I grew up with a brother who was 8 years older, and he obviously was super into Star Wars. And so many people make the comparison that this movie was trying to be Star Wars in some way. And I really feel like actually it wasn't. It appealed in a different way. It had a different sense about it. It has a lot of entertainment value, which still, I think, holds. And it's just a good time, an all-around good time. And that's what I just love about it, that it still kind of had that for me, that it's just fun.
Yeah.
Super fun.
All right. Thank you, Suzanne. Next, let's go to Zabe. What did you love most about the Rocketeer, The Last Starfighter?
The classic maker for me in this movie is the actual end of the movie. We see the overall theme and meaning of the movie fulfilled. Otis, he sums it up, the entire moral of the movie, when he says, quote, "Things change, always do. You'll get your chance. Important thing is, when it comes, you've got to grab it with both hands and hold on tight."
Yeah, that is a good moral, for sure.
Yeah, we see this at the end of the movie when Alex makes the most of his chance. And he comes home from saving the galaxy. He's the hero that gets what I call the three Gs. The glory, the girl, and the Gunstar.
Yeah. Well done.
He got a chance to...
And Grig.
Yeah. The four Gs. How can I leave Grig out?
That's awesome.
He got his chance and he held on tight with both hands. Yeah. And that's what the movie's trying to teach us, I think.
Yeah.
If there is a moral to be had in this fun, yeah, lighthearted.
There's one other space movie. Sorry, I keep talking over you, Zabe. What was that?
Yeah, knock it off.
What's that? This is my show. I'll talk over you if I want to. No, what were you saying there at the end?
Here's my last bit. Is the part that I love is at the very end is when Lewis becomes every 11-year-old in America after seeing this movie and immediately runs off to play video games in hopes of it putting you in position to live a better life. In that moment, we are all Lewis, reaching for the stars and hoping for more in life than just to live in a trailer park with a bunch of old people and Playboy magazines.
Yeah, exactly. Take that. Not going to fix your electricity.
Very well said.
Yes, very well said. I will. So what I was trying to say was, I think there's another moral, and I'm curious if any of you will, this major classic maker, but that Centauri says earlier, and you know what? It's weird. I'm having this flood of memories from when, we had covered this movie before, Paul, back like 12 years ago, I think, with Deb. Oh my gosh. I can't believe it's coming back to me now. That darn that Jared taking my memories, but they're coming back. And I seem to remember Deb saying something about the line Centauri had about if all you believe about yourself is that you're from a trailer park, then that's all you'll ever be.
I think it's this one.
Listen, Centauri, I'm not any of those guys. I'm a kid from a trailer park.
If that's what you think, then that's all you'll ever be.
That one?
Yes, that's the one. So I think that is then all in a way paid off by the one you're talking about, Zabe, where it's like, well, if you see yourself as you can't rise above your circumstances, then yeah, you're going to be stuck in them. But if that chance comes along and you're not too afraid of it and you'll hold on, then you'll be able to overcome the circumstances you're in. So yeah, fantastic.
Absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree.
Awesome.
They work in concert.
Exactly. Yes. Paul? What was your classic maker for this movie?
My classic maker is the music. We've already talked about it.
Okay.
It's been on my playlist for years. I love it. I enjoy it. It's I could listen to that more times and not get sick of it. Like if I watch the film like 10 times a year, I'd probably get a little sick of it. I can listen to this 10 times a year, the theme of it, and not get sick of it.
Do you have a favorite track or is it just the main theme?
Just the main theme is great.
Go for it, James.
We watched this with our 11-year-old daughter, and we're watching the opening credits, and she made the comment of, boy, these opening credits are taking forever.
My kids will say very similar things, yes.
Wait. But then she said, but at least we get this great music to listen to while we're watching them.
Wow.
So she appreciated it.
Very nice. Cool.
At least it wasn't white text on black background.
That's true.
It almost had that Superman which is cool.
Am I correct? This is just tangentially related to that. Are we starting at Rylos and going backwards to Earth? Or are we going from Earth to Rylos? I was a little confused about that.
Well, my thing was, I was confused.
I think it was Rylos.
Okay. Yeah. But and what did you think, Zane?
I found it interesting because Universal Pictures made this, and the opening, whatever they call it,
logo.
Logo, right. They show Earth, right? And then he immediately goes into this kind of space scene where you're kind of pulling away and going through these different planets. And then I thought, hey, how cool. They're kind of like melding that in.
Their
opening little title card with the opening credits. That's cool. But then when they end up at Earth, so it's kind of like a circle that they do. So I'm like, oh, maybe they're not as clever as I thought they were.
They made a U-turn.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, that, I believe, just leaves my classic maker, which, Deb, you actually kind of touched on this a bit. You really like the humor. And the element within the humor that I really appreciated was all the stuff with the beta unit. I liked this clone of Alex and that character and how they played off each other. I almost felt like it was so Alex is almost like a fish out of water story. Him up with the Rylons. That is very, it's not the whole movie, but there's an element of being fish out of water. And then the beta unit is a fish out of water story within that bigger fish out of water story. So I really like the parallelism of that.
It's like Finding Nemo twice.
I mean, I guess that's almost like a Prince and the Pauper type of thing, but anyways, regardless, I just really liked it. I really liked that element and the humor that we were able to garner from there. The only thing I didn't make sense to me is he takes his head off to fix. How is he able to see his ear better fixing it that way? He can't see it any better.
Multiple
from that
cameras
angle.
Within his, it's not just the eyes that have cameras, his body does.
Well, you might have leverage. Right. You might have leverage if it's not on top of your head, right?
I guess.
Easier work on something right in front of you than like on top
Haven't
of your shoulder.
You ever wanted to take your head off and fix your hair or something? I know I have.
Well, it's if I had hair to fix, way. Maybe I would. Thanks for that, Deb.
I meant when you were younger.
Oh my gosh, Paul. All right, guys.
Francisco, one of the things that I read about this movie regarding the beta unit was in our early screening, the audience loved the beta unit so much that they found that that comment over and over in their screen testing.
Oh, really? Okay.
So they went back and they filmed extra scenes.
Oh, right, wow.
With the beta unit. So that's why when you're watching it, some of the continuity is a little bit weird in it. Mm-hmm. And Suzanne, you made mention of the
Lance
actor.
Yeah.
You want to talk about that real quick?
Well, from what I read, Lance Guest was ill. Something happened where he was ill during the filming. So you can see that the beta unit, he like looks different. He looks odd. There's something like not Alex about him. Mm-hmm. I don't think that was specifically intentional. It just really worked for the movie because his hair was cut short and he had to wear a wig.
Oh,
so the beta unit wears a wig and he has heavy, heavy makeup on.
Oh, you know that scene when they're in the back of the truck going to Silver Lake and they make him laugh. Remember, he does that silly laugh. He looks so different. He's clearly wearing a wig and he looks a little gaunt. He looks thin. And that's
he also looks
there.
Really different when he pulls that blanket out and his eyes are bugging out and stuff.
He was really sick in that scene. You don't want that illness.
There's live footage of Lance Guest while he was recovering.
Wow.
I'm getting better.
No, you're not. You're stone dead in a moment.
It's okay, Francisco. 1, 3, 2, 1. 1, 2, 3. What the heck is bothering me? All right. Okay, Carl Winslow. Now that we've talked about the things we liked, there was a lot to like about Last Starfire, but there's probably some things we don't like. So let's get into. Oh, sorry, guys. Hold on. I'm going to take captain's privilege and give you one more thing I like. Sorry, I forgot about this, and that would be Junkyard Juggernauts. A warlord has taken the king and queen prisoner, and their only hope is you and the Junkyard. Junkyard Juggernauts is a pixel art-infused tabletop card game for 1-4 players designed by Francisco Ruiz. Hey, that's me! You will play as a Mageneer, drafting cards to build the arms and legs of a magic-fueled mech, aka a Juggernaut, before taking on the warlord. With an expected Kickstarter in 2024, maybe 2025, there is still plenty of work to be done on Junkyard Juggernauts, and you can stay in the know by signing up to their newsletter at junkyardjuggernauts.com.
That's great, Francisco, but we can barely hear the music, so you may want to fix that in post.
It's over my track. I don't think I can fix it, but okay, I'll maybe try that.
What does that have to do with The Last Starfighter?
I don't know. You brought up the music. I don't know what it has to do with The Last Starfighter. Oh my God. Oh, you mean Junkyard Juggernauts? What does that have to do? Well, obviously, so it's so clear, Paul, because there's this son, the Rylos guy's son, Xur, goes against the Emperor and is trying to take them over because he wants to rule, much like the Warlord in this game.
Oh, so it's the same.
It's the same.
Oh, yeah. I think you'll be sued by Universal for stealing their ideas. It's the same.
All right. It's not exactly the same.
Okay. You hear that, lawyers? It's not the same.
All right. How about some trivia about The Last Starfighter? Would you like that?
Yes. All right. Yes. All right. Much better.
So did you all realize screenwriter Jonathan R. Betuel, Betuel, sure, whatever, got the idea for this movie because he wandered into a video arcade and saw a young boy playing a video game. At that time, he was reading the book about King Arthur, The Once and Future King by T.H. White. Betuel wondered what would happen if a video game were a metaphorical sword in a stone and a boy racked up an incredible score, which would cause a ripple effect across the universe. And then he also, there's a mention in the movie of, is Centauri doing the Excalibur trick again? And that's sort of a callback to this. But my question to you all is, what is your favorite game to play in the arcade? So I'm going to start with Paul.
Man, back in the day, the arcade was a scene. Like, in the 80s, that was a place to go for the young people. Which is there? I don't know if there's anything like that today. But anyway, back in the day, it came out a little later, but the game that I would like to play was the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, because not only did I like the characters, but they're your friends. Up to three other people could play with you. So that got some of my quarters back in the day. I remember enjoying that. In fact, if I could get one arcade console to own, it would be that one. And I was privileged enough to own one myself for a few months, but I had to sell it to, you know, make rent and stuff.
Well, that's important.
Is it? I mean, months come and go, and now that that unit's gone. Oh. But anyway.
All right.
So I picked TMNT.
Okay. How about you, Suzanne?
Without question, Tron.
Tron
was my game.
I could never
in Tron, it had like several different games in it. Which one was which one did you like, or did you like them all?
I liked them all, but I had the hardest time actually, I think, with, I mean, the light bikes were impossible. Nobody could ever beat those. Once you get to the higher levels, of course. But also, man, I had a hard time with the tanks just because it was confused, like easy, and then it wasn't. Like it was so hard. So I really loved the other two, which was the spiders and then the cone, the descending cone, right?
Yeah.
Both of those are just fantastic. I love them so much.
That's awesome.
Yeah, Tron is for sure my game. I wish also, like Paul, that I had a cabinet. But unfortunately, the problem with that, so they make these cabinets which have like everything and more. They're all loaded onto, you know, a piece of memory that's not even significant enough to run your oven timer these days. You know, they're very insignificant pieces of memory. So they can put, you know, hundreds of games in one single cabinet. But the problem with it is that Tron has really specific controls, and so it does not quite fit into the controls, so they don't put them in, they don't make cabinets. So if you want a Tron, you have to actually get a Tron, and that's it. I want one.
That's very cool. So
playing it online, you can't even play it online just because the controls are there's no like it's method for him. But I love it so much. It wasn't what I was best at, but I just love it so
that's
much.
Awesome. Very cool.
Yeah.
Zabe, how about you?
My comment has a tale of two husbands here, a good husband and a bad husband.
Okay.
I'll start with the good husband. Is I found Suzanne's been mentioning wanting to play Tron again for years. And I actually tracked down an actual Tron machine in Las Vegas.
Oh, wow.
And we drove to Vegas and I surprised her. Hey, there's Tron over there in the quarter, you know, and we played it. And
oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Yay, good husband.
Yeah. I didn't let her win.
So amazing.
So my bad husband tale is, so it's no secret. I've been married
for gas and food.
No, I've been married more than once. And, on my first marriage, had our honeymoon on, the Disney cruise, and on the Disney cruise, there was a Galaga machine.
Oh, nice.
And Galaga is my game.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And so, I spent a good portion of my honeymoon playing Galaga on the Disney cruise with a million other things to do on that cruise. I'm playing Galaga, a game I've played a million times from 1980, blah, blah, blah. So, but here's the thing. I had the game of my life. I had my last Starfighter moment because I bust the record on that box.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
I scored over a million points. I mean, it flips over at a million. But I scored over a million points, and I've never done it since.
Oh, wow.
So I flipped the machine, and it was just
On the arcade. That's impressive because a lot of the home editions are not as nearly as hard as the arcade. Yep. That's impressive.
There's a cabinet. Yeah.
We have one. We have a Galaga cabinet.
We don't have a real one. We got one of those fake ones.
We have
the one up.
Any high score on that machine doesn't count.
It's a half cabinet.
So. Yeah. You need to have a legit full cabinet, old school. And that's what this was.
Wow.
And, you know, it's surprising that that marriage didn't last. However,
okay,
I've got a great memory of my Disney cruise by getting my million points.
Nice. That's impressive.
Yeah. Deb, impress us with your favorite arcade game.
I am the wrong generation. Because my kids were young when it all started. Mm-hmm. But my favorite is Pac-Man.
Oh, okay. Yes. Wonka, 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 wonka.
Yeah.
Very nice.
And that's about as high up as I went.
Yeah.
I let my kids.
Oh, I want to hear Francisco's impression of Pac-Man again.
Do you really?
Okay, now do Atari Pac-Man sound effects. Oh, that's not how it goes.
Well, I don't know.
You don't remember the Atari sound effects?
Oh, yeah. Pac-Man? The ones they used in Superman 3. Yeah. Yeah.
It sounds like a cat walking across a piano.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, that's it. Eating the dots. Dang, dang, dang.
They're rectangles in Pac-Man.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. For Atari, they're like little rectangles.
But Francisco, is there an arcade console cabinet of your dreams that you, if you could own one?
Well, I really
and a main machine doesn't count.
No, yeah. I always really enjoyed the House of the Dead games, where you would shoot the zombies.
Oh, with the guns.
Oh, yeah.
I like those are
fun.
Those I always wanted to get past. There's this one like, I feel like I could get in a couple levels, but I could never get much further. And it always seemed like doable, as opposed to like there's Terminator games that are always so impossible. Like it takes thousands of hits to kill one Terminator, which I guess is realistic for that universe. But this is an arcade game. I got one quarter. I want to bust through these guys. Anyway, House of the Dead is what I'll say.
Okay. Great trivia.
Those games don't cost one quarter, by the way.
No. It's kind of like I would have played what you mentioned earlier, Dragon's Lair would have been so much fun if that wasn't such a quarter muncher.
Yeah, totally. But thank you, Paul.
Yeah, and now that we've all had some trivial fun, let's find out what memories you, our awesome rewinders, had about
The
Last Starfighter. Okay, wow. Yeah.
Dustin Warford says, such a fun movie that justified my gaming addiction as a kid. Never know when it's going to help you save the galaxy. Also, a sequel was teased and never came to fruition. Sad face.
Yeah. Are we going to skip this next one?
What? No.
All right.
Just say it. It'll be fun for funsies.
Sure. This is for you know who. Who Will Save Generation X podcast says, I say the line, you're going to bust the record every time I watch the Olympics or play video games.
That's awesome.
I remember the rad graphics. I remember that knife scepter thingy that the bad guy with the male pattern baldness uses as a punctuation whenever he wants to seem tough and was super lame. It would make for an awful weapon. But mostly after watching it, I remember always wanting to fight a desperate battle against incredible odds. Put me down for a, quote, classic on this one. Happy face.
Indeed. Jezreel says, for the time, it was pretty perfect. That was the zeitgeist of the 80s. It was better than most of us expected. I saw it in a theater at the bottom of a vertical mall in Salt Lake City. That mall had a two-story arcade, so as the perfect target for the that movie.
Yep. Wardell White says, remembering wondering where I could play that video game. Another movie I enjoyed with an uncle.
Awesome. Drew Dodgen says, I remember the early CGI and wondering as a kid why it looked so weird.
David Williams says, classic. I could watch it over and over again. And the music is amazing.
Nice. James Felix says, greetings, Starfighter. This is 80s sci-fi at its very best. One of my favorite movies as a kid, and one I still enjoy today. Plus, Robert Preston steals the show as the music man in space.
Indeed. We didn't talk about that very much, but yes.
That is true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Patrick Edwards says, I remember always getting confused with the many other space movies of the time.
Fair. And Kevin Joshua Burnham says, it's okay.
All right.
Well, thank you all for sharing your memories. And maybe, you know what, Kevin has a point. Maybe this is just okay because there's plenty of things we didn't like about this film. So let's get into our
worst woofs.
Prepare for target like Patrick Starfighter.
Man, I keep missing. Stop moving. Ugh, these targets. Okay, let's begin with Zabe. What's one thing you didn't like about The Last Starfighter?
There are some real head-scratching bits in this movie. Mm-hmm. Like, did Centauri just kind of plan on leaving the beta unit behind after he brought Alex home? You guys remember he drops off Alex after he checks out in the middle of the movie, and he comes face to face with the beta unit.
Yeah, but his car broke down, so I thought he was going to pick him up later, but maybe not.
Well, what was the plan there? No, he just dropped him off. His car was still working. He still drove away.
Oh yeah, he drove away. Right? That's right.
Right.
Yeah. Good call. Yeah, as many times as I've seen this, that one just went over my head.
It's like Centauri's like, fine, kid, I'll let you deal with him. You don't want help? Well, this is your payback.
Yeah, there's just gonna be like two Alex Rogans now.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
He was hoping Alex would change his mind.
Yeah, that's probably what it was. But yeah, good point, Zip. I never thought about that.
Well, I'm sure it's only for furthering the plot, because Alex has to go back and face his destiny, but it makes no sense at all that they would leave a top-of-the-line, simuloid, synthetic life form. Furthermore, they break the rules again in the movie with the beta unit, because Alex says, why can't the beta go to Rylos and fight in his place, remember?
Mm-hmm.
The beta replies with something like, well, it's against the law for betas to fight.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's the beta that saves the day in the end by killing the alien assassin dude by ramming him with that dude's truck, remember?
Well, I thought they weren't they couldn't do the space flight. Like,
they're not allowed to fight in a gunfight.
They didn't pass the NASA test. Neither did Gary Sinise, so I don't feel bad for him.
Wow.
There's some discontinuity going on, and that's a bummer. That's all I'm saying on that.
The beta unit was going to get the mumps, or was it the measles? The measles. So that's why.
Measles.
Yeah. But you know what? On that same line of thinking, Zabe, my tragedy here. One thing I disliked that didn't make sense was, okay, if a Grig is Alex comes back. It's just him and Grig, and they're like, "Okay, now what do we do?" And he's like, "Okay, I'm gonna pilot, fine." And Grig's saying, "It's a prototype Gunstar. It has better firepower, better all this stuff."
Yes.
And I'm like, "Okay, it's better in every conceivable way from a normal Gunstar. Why do you not just make all the Gunstars this way? There's no conceivable downside. I mean,
no,
if it was like
next." It's the 2.0 version. They have
it's
all
the
their
thing. What do you think a prototype means?
It's the only one that they made
and they haven't tested it yet.
No.
If this works, then they'll usher out the other ones. That's like saying
if it works, okay, then see, here's the thing. You need to say, okay, but this part's untested, or you could say
he does.
The Death Blossom is not part of it. You could have had all these other aspects on the other one. Say something like, but it drains power faster, or the cockpit's really slow.
Francisco, it doesn't matter anyways, because that's the only Gunstar we ever see in the whole movie.
But
so even
the
if
thing,
they were all...
No, it's not. You see a hanger of Gunstar.
I know, but they don't do anything in the hanger.
I know, but maybe they would have lasted if they were improved like this one.
Francisco's upset that there's a Highlander Gunstar and there can only be one, and it's not fair to the other Gunstars or something. I don't know.
Well, maybe the technology's new. Maybe they didn't. Exactly. The Death Blossom
technology.
Gunstars were already made, and then someone came up with the Death Bloom, and then
I will give you all that it may have just been they just made this one that was an improvement on all the others.
Yes.
I guess I was thinking, okay, why not just make them all this way to begin with? But that's fair that you're iterating, so this might be the next best one.
It's kind of like
I will give you that.
Yeah, It's like,
how many iPhones do we have? Like, right?
They could I have all be zero iPhones. From Jump Street. I use Android. Okay. So
how
I
many Androids do you have? They can't all be Google Pixel.
All right, that's like, fair.
You had to start somewhere.
Very fair. All right.
Yeah,
fine.
You start with the Garfield cat phone and you build from there.
I had a Snoopy, but okay. Yeah. All right. Fair. It's still something that I didn't care for, but I see your guys' arguments. Suzanne, what's something you didn't like?
So something that I didn't like, to segue from our trivia.
Yeah.
I am angry that I never got to stand in an arcade and play The Last Starfighter. Why didn't I get to do that?
Yeah, I don't know why there wasn't
why
one.
Did I have...
Well, and they didn't get it in time for Christmas.
Yeah, right, exactly. And then what did they say? They didn't get it in time for Christmas, and then they just say, you know what? Just forget it then. Let's just not even do it at all. Like, we were promised a game.
So it's such a lost opportunity.
Do you imagine?
No, they said they would do it. They said that they were going to make a game.
And they had plans to do it, but funds fell through or whatever.
I mean, the cabinet. I'll take the cabinet just by itself. Like, it's beautiful.
It is a beautiful
one. I love the logo. I really love the logo. And I'm so mad that I never got the experience to be able to, you know, to be Lewis, to sit there and to watch the movie and be all inspired and then to go out and like find an arcade and play the game. Why didn't I get to do that?
Yeah,
I'm
mad.
Because then you would be more upset. Look, I played the game. I beat the command ship. Where is my Gunstar?
Zabe, you wanted to say something?
My understanding, if I'm remembering it correctly, I didn't sit through the credits this time. I believe at the end of the credits in the movie, it says, look for the game coming from Atari or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure they say that.
Yeah, that's why I said we were promised. We were promised a game.
My understanding is
an NES game, I believe, but that's
yeah,
what
but
say.
That was a crap
yeah, but that's not, you know, that's like, that's that was... not that's not a cabinet. That's a console game. Like, my understanding is in 1985, I should have been in an arcade playing The Last Starfighter, and I wasn't.
I imagine it's just because it didn't do as well in the theater as they were hoping. And if it had gone bonkers success, they probably would have released it. But that'd be my guess as to why it didn't happen.
My understanding is they did make a game and it sucked.
Oh.
And that's why they didn't release it.
Oh, that could be
it too. That's what I believe I've read. Anyways, but there are people that have gone through and retroactively have made a modulator that you can find online.
Okay, cool.
You can go in. So you can play it, but... not on a rad cabinet like Suzanne's wanting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like Tron. We're all it's not built
that's
the
part
same
of
way.
The experience.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Let's see. Paul, what's something that soured your experience of The Last Starfighter?
So I said one of my likes was the practical effects and such. But one of my dislikes is the practical effects. mainly, there were some scenes in there, like when the beta unit takes off his head and places it on the desk. You can tell that's like a mannequin head, they got from JCPenney or something. Like there were small moments like that could have easily been cut out and or filmed in a way that you kind of don't see the obnoxious downside of practical effects, and this movie doesn't steer away from it as much as it should have in those small areas.
Okay.
And it takes me out of the movie when I see it.
Okay. Wow. All right. That's fair. You know what takes me out of the movie? My next dislike, the scale of the Codan ship when it crashes into the moon. That moon is either super tiny or that Codan ship is huge.
We noticed that as well.
Like, what the drug is happening right now? But
and how did he crash? Like, did it crash into the atmosphere or like because
I think it just crashes the surface?
The moon was big enough to have its own gravitational pull. That's what it said it was. They were caught in.
Yeah. So
the ship is practically the size of the moon. Like they'd have their similar gravitational pull.
Crashes. Yeah. It doesn't.
Good thing it was made up.
5 feet and then all of a sudden it crashed. Like it was weird. It was that whole scene was real weird.
Yeah,
and
they just needed to zoom in a little on the moon, right? Just make the moon bigger and just
have true.
Yeah, partially cropped edit or whatever. Partial image.
Sorry. I don't tell you, but that's something I disliked. Let's go to Deb. What's something you disliked about The Last Starfighter?
You can tell we're from the same family because we think a lot alike. What And as many times as I've watched it this time in 2024, the cartoony effects were were what kind of
took
made
you out
it
of the movie.
Seem dated. And, although the way the starships were drawn and made, and at the time it was groundbreaking. They had never been able to do such detail before.
Yeah.
Oh, you're talking about the computer generated starship scenes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so now it seems because we've come so far in technology, now it seems a little it seems dated and cartoony. But
what was this made on the iPhone 1?
Knowing that it's from 1984 and it was groundbreaking at the time, that helps. But I was disappointed that nothing stays the same. So
yeah. Totally get that.
I think if this movie was to be rated nostalgic by any of the listeners, it's for that reason, Deb.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Totally get that. Zabe, what's something that would lower your reign to a nostalgic? Something else you don't like?
So I love Greg, and often those kinds of like sidekick type characters in the 80s movies that were made for kids are super annoying and lame. He's not, which is great. However, he is so passive aggressive and totally shames Alex into becoming the last Starfighter.
Quite remembering that. How does he do it?
He breaks the moral of the movie to leave the room to say that Alex is kind of pressured and shamed into fighting against Zura and the Kodan Armada. He's like, oh, sure, I'll take you home. But, eventually Zura's going to get to Earth and kill you all,
sounds like sound reasoning to me.
Hey, we got this prototype rad Gunstar that can do all kinds of cool things. But, if you don't want to do any of them, that's cool, bro. I've got 6,000 children who are going to be slaves to Zura, but you do you, bro.
You're not wrong, but you're not right, because it wasn't portrayed in that way. He had a soft hand about it, which
soft hand to people who can be easily manipulated, Paul.
Hey, I'm all for it. I mean,
how would you have preferred?
Full of me, man.
How would you have preferred it been approached, Zabe? Do you have like a Zabe's fantastic fan fiction?
I prefer it would be handled differently.
Okay, how?
Okay, cool.
You're giving me, call him a coward, and that's it.
You're giving me problems. I demand solutions.
Well, I think Alex should have come to those conclusions on his own. Because it feels like it's kind of forced on him.
Yeah.
Make the conscious choice to grab on with both hands.
He
was left no options.
Even at the end, he was kind of hesitating. Do I want to go and take this next step? He didn't.
But think about the enormity of that decision.
I was about to say, but we're all growing, so.
I mean, I left home and went to a foreign country after we got married, because my husband was stationed in Italy, and I thought very long and hard before I said yes to him, because you're leaving your family behind for 4 years and living in a foreign country. That's a lot to ask. And here he's on a whole nother planet. He's leaving behind the human race,
I think it takes longer to get from United States to Italy than it did from Rylos to the trailer park.
True story.
Good point.
Well, I'm glad you followed the moral of this movie, Mom, to always trust Centauri.
Well, not quite.
Let's go to Suzanne. I trust you have another dislike for us.
I do. So we've talked about the practical effects, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And it's kind of along those lines. Mm. While I really love, the Kodans, even the discrepancy kind of that they pointed out earlier, I don't mind at all. I don't mind the way that everything looks. I think makeup and costuming is really great, and you know, Grig, fantastic. So having like put all that effort and energy into all of those characters, apparently they ran out of effort and energy, because then you turn around and you look at the actual starfighters sitting in the chairs, and you're like, okay, what happened here? Did we hire Jim Henson all of a sudden? Because they don't fit. We have
Octopus Man.
We have the inside of an ear wearing the outside of it on his face.
Oh, yeah, I can see that, yeah.
And it's like, what? Like, I get wanting to have unusual creatures and stuff like that, but none of the starfighters and the way that they're like portrayed, even the fact that he's like, the what recruits, or he says something and they all turn around and they go, huh? And then they go, like, that's just so
weird. What?
You guys are starfighters. Like, you're not here for comic relief. You're
or are they?
The elites, you know? I don't know. So I didn't like
the Keystone Cops.
I didn't like how cool everything was. Oh, and then especially like where they were. So did you guys get vibes, like Space Mountain vibes?
Like, oh, when interesting.
Yeah.
Total Space Mountain vibes, right?
Now I like it more.
You would, Paul.
Okay, so when I was a kid, you know how at the end of the Space Mountain, there's all of those like strobe effects, like as it's stopping, slowing you down. I thought that like, no joke, I thought that was Alex when he gets on the conveyor belt and all those like lights are shining.
Yeah. It's probably the same technology.
What that was.
They probably filmed it right there on Space Mountain.
Oh, my God. Oh, I doubt they did that.
I mean, it looks the same. Like, the look and feel of the whole, like, Starfighter base, it's all Space Mountain.
Yeah.
You know? And so I really loved it. And then all of a sudden we, like, pivot, and there's all these, like, dopey, like, like, Starfighters. And I'm just like, no, those guys should be awesome. They should be super cool. So I feel like the creature shop really went all out on the characters that have lines, but the ones that like don't really have lines, they just got real silly with it. And it's, I don't know. I don't love that. I wanted the Starfighters to be like amazing, awesome, and awesome. Well,
how about you meet them halfway, Susanna? Maybe creatures. Just one of them is cool looking.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, okay.
You know,
needed Michael Westmore to do the creatures.
Who's Michael Westmore? I'm not familiar with that.
He does the all the aliens for Star Trek.
Oh, okay, gotcha. What I was gonna say is,
I'll even take any of those. I'll take any of those. Let's bring the Star Trek monsters.
Okay, so let's take a Star Trek like humanoid as the alien. That's an extra alien that we actually enjoy. We actually like. There's something about as an audience, we're like, oh, that's a cool person. We'll call him like Zurbaugh.
Grig.
No, Grig's there too. We have Grig already. Grig's great. We have another
awesome one.
Follow the logic, Paul. Hold on. We have Grig and we have Zurbaugh. Zurbaugh's fun. He's like, he's just sort of this dopey character, but you love him. He's a great Starfighter pilot. You can sort of
Misa
tell
Sir
that.
Bob.
Whatever. Anyway, but then, and like Alex actually like, oh wow, it's almost like what's Luke's friend with the mustache that dies?
Zach?
Yeah.
Oh no, you're talking about
no.
No, maybe
he Zach. Doesn't die.
No,
not Wedge. Not Wedge Antilles. No, this is in the A New Hope.
Biggs.
Is it Biggs? Yeah, I think it's Biggs. Yeah,
Biggs Darklighter.
So it's like Biggs, but you know, more likable. And then what happens is this Zurbaugh guy dies, and Alex finds that out, and that's one of the things that realizes, oh man, the stakes are higher. I do need to help. And so that, and then we get to where Zabe was saying, where it feels like he was sort of pushed into this. This comes from his own. So I think Francisco's Fabulous Fan Fiction is we have Zurbaugh, the alien that everyone loves, that's made by the same guy that made Star Trek aliens in this movie. And we're all happy. We're all having a good time.
Yes.
Except the movie's now a half hour long.
How dare you, PaulJPowers.com? Okay. Yeah,
even the voice on the one that he speaks to, so not the one who gets angry at him, but even the one who that he speaks to, he like he's like meh, meh, meh. Yeah. I don't know. It's
It is weird. But let's go to
so all you aliens with voices. I'm sorry.
Let's go to you, Paul.
If you're going to be a starfighter, your voice better get deeper.
Oh, wow. What's one more thing you just like, Paul, before I get to our Tragic Makers?
Okay. The main villain of the kid, Zur.
Yeah, Zur.
Yeah. He is such... He assumes too much. I don't know. Yeah. He's like... a whiny bully that doesn't deserve to be in the power that he is. I mean, at one point, the Kodan say,
"How long must we endure this fool?"
I mean, everybody around him knows that he's a hothead and he should not be in a position of leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Make okay, so he has codes, so pay him off. Why is he in charge? It only leads to their downfall. It's a weak villain, and I think the movie suffers from that.
I think it's physically impossible for him to be a hothead.
He's bald. Cool. Oh my gosh. All the heat leaves his head. Yeah, exactly. Oh.
Right. So I disagree with you, Paul.
I really thought the same thing. He's like a child. Even the scepter's a toy. It's a toy.
Yeah.
You guys are all stealing my Tragic Maker.
You're welcome. I'll leave you to say more.
What was that?
To kind of illustrate your point. I think to kind of illustrate your point, to show like the level of his childishness is that scene where he gets really mad because the other guy orders him to fire and he's like, "No, only I have the ability to say fire." And then he like turns around and he's like, "Fire." You know, really, dude?
Yeah.
Like that's the level of your childishness. Mm-hmm.
Ego on this guy.
No one can play until I say play. Like I have to be the one to actually say the word play.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's a kid. Now bring me my toy. Ching.
So
well, I think it begs to remember that in 1984 the villains were not nearly as
I'm sorry.
Complicated and evil.
When did Wrath of Khan come out?
Oh, pump the brakes, yo.
You know, sorry? That was Star Trek, Paul. That's why it's so good. Huh?
No, I'm saying Wrath of Khan, 1982, has a much better villain.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I got the wrong end of that. I thought it was
Yeah.
And the thing, much better villain than all y'all. Then.
Yeah, it's Clobber and Tongue.
Not that thing. How dare you, Paul? Okay, so let's get to our Tragic Makers. Zabe, it sounds like you have more to say about Zur, so I'll let you start.
I think he's clearly the biggest Tragic Maker of this whole movie.
The villain
is total weak sauce.
Yeah.
He's not much more than a mustache-twirling bad guy who makes evil speeches and then gives him a maniacal laugh as punctuation.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
It's a cartoon character. In fact, I was about to say on a side note, I kind of think it's funny that the Rylans, who are all balding with like silver white hair, they're Dr. Seuss characters in real life.
They do look like the people in How the Grinch Stole Christmas,
it's the Who.
Oh my gosh, that is so true.
It's a Dr. Seuss character gone bad is what the villain is here. Well,
I just want to know what's his motivation. You know, why is he a traitor to Rylos?
So right. he can have power issues? I think. Well, probably that, issues. But
his daddy issue, they mention him being like a cult leader, but you know, what's his deal?
Yeah, he was a cult leader. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. But the thing that takes the cake
is that freaking scepter that he has. The thing is just super lame. It's meant to look cool, but it looks like a 3-foot overly decorated bulky aluminum thing, like piece of metal that hides like a 4-inch retractable butter knife.
I don't think it was a butter knife, but okay.
It's a butter knife. Look closely. It's a butter knife.
It's actually, you used to see?
It's actually 4 butter knives put together. Make a point.
That's very fair. I can't disagree with that. That wasn't my Tragic Maker, but I can't disagree with you there, Zabe. Let's go with Suzanne. What was your tragic maker?
I got more to say.
Oh, yeah, more. I'm so sorry, Zay. Please continue. Expound.
I got my last little bit.
Okay.
All right.
I just think that Xur is super underdeveloped. And
yeah, absolutely.
Movies, even today, that succeed, like superhero movies or whatever, mm-hmm. reason why DC cannot make a good superhero movie is because their villains all stink. Mm. And why Marvel can make good movies because Marvel bad guys are good. Mm. And that's what keeps this movie from being an all-time classic mm-hmm. is that the bad guys just suck. Krill, however, is awesome.
Oh, yeah. Krill's a great
The leader villain, of the Kodan.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
He should have been the main bad guy. And I think it's lame that Xur lives and gets away and mm-hmm. Krill dies a glorious death before delivering absolutely the best line in the whole movie that we here on this podcast will all say together, along with everyone out there listening. I'll set it up. Ready?
Yes.
She won't answer the helm. We're locked into the moon's gravitational pull. What do we do? We die.
We die.
I thought it was just die, but I was close. Yes, that is such a great, and with his deep voice, we die. Good job, Dan Mason. But yeah, that was.
Yeah, but you got to get that like.
Oh, yeah.
The dramatic little one eyepiece thing that serves no purpose.
Wait, yeah, I was going to say, that makes no sense. What is that? Why would you put that on now?
Like you said, it heightens up the drama there.
It does. It's a nice little punctuation there.
Yeah, it has no purpose, imagine? But I wouldn't want to live without it being in this movie.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if you were I don't know who played the actor, but can you imagine like how annoying that must have been? You got slapped in the eye, like, or on the bridge of the nose.
You see him, he shudders every time it closes. His eyes kind of flutter every time it closes.
I can't even
imagine.
That's
a line that we have used just in regular life in our family.
Oh. Every time someone says, "What are we gonna do?"
We die.
So, Suzanne, what do you wish died about this movie? What's your tragic maker?
Well, we've kind of touched a little bit on it, but I think I have just a slightly different. So one of the things that Zabe talked about was the fact that there was a lot of passive aggressiveness from Grig, mm-hmm. Which was very tragic when it comes to. What ends up being Alex's motivation to stay in it. I absolutely agree. Grig was passive aggressive, even though he was like graceful and kind of kind about it. Mm-hmm. The underlying sense was still there. And I kind of feel like that Alex made his decision because he was externally motivated rather than being internally motivated. Like we talked about, mm-hmm. if he would have had Zurbob.
Yeah, Zurbob.
Okay. If he would have had Zurbob, then he would have, come to care for a Starfighter. If he would have had some sort of relationship with anyone besides Centauri, who was mm-hmm. already dead, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
That he would have cared. Like he was a kid. Like he still had his whole life ahead of him. Why would he risk his life to fight in this war? He has no personal attachment to it. Mm-hmm. And I really feel like one of the things that was really tragic and that's kind of a misstep in the storytelling part of it. So not only did they coward shame him,
mm-hmm.
they were passive aggressive with him. Also, they didn't listen to him. And that was very frustrating for me to see. He said, "I don't want to do this. Take me home. I don't want to do this."
Mm-hmm.
And they were "No, we're not going to take you home yet. Are you sure? Are you sure?" Like they was listening to him when he was "Take me home," and that was very frustrating. So it wasn't he had to prompt several times, "Okay, Centauri, no means no. We need to have a discussion about no means no." So that was very frustrating for me to watch. He said, "I don't want to do this," and mm-hmm. no one is truly listening to him because he has great ability. It doesn't matter if you have great ability if you don't want to do something, mm-hmm. So it was, I'm triggered by that. I get triggered no really does mean no. And it's important that your voice matters. And when you say, even if you're right, wrong, motivated correctly, not motivated correctly, I don't care. If you say, "I don't want to do this," and then someone doesn't listen to you, and then you have to keep repeating yourself, uh-huh. That's troublesome for me. And so it really triggered me in the movie to watch him essentially be shamed and externally motivated into doing it. Granted, it all worked out at the end, 80s movies were like that, where we're like, we're gonna shame you into this, like we're gonna push you into it, we're not gonna listen to you when you say that you want to go home, like. But yeah, I don't know, I'm a little triggered by that. Gotcha. So that was hard to watch to realize it. I'm none of that as a kid, but as an adult it was my number one tragic maker, like, got listen it. To someone say that they want to go home.
But you, Suzanne, really? They weren't listening to him because they're too busy shouting, "Victory or death! Victory or death!"
Those are the only two options.
Yeah. Deb,
as a person who grew up in the 50s mm-hmm. and 60s, I think through the decades we've learned to listen, to be better listeners to mm-hmm. children and weaker people and so forth, because my parents grew up in a generation where, you know, children were seen and not heard mm-hmm. and children didn't have a voice. And so then when it was our generation, we could, we had a bigger voice, but if the parents had a bigger agenda or they felt they knew better or whatever, then it was the parents who took over from that. Mm-hmm. And so I think that today's generation would see it as not being fair that he wasn't listened to. But to me, it was just that Alex is 17 or 18, whatever, how old mm-hmm. he is, and all the rest are adults. So he doesn't have as big a say in what's going on. And so they have their agenda, and so they're trying to fit him into their mold. Mm. So to me, it made a lot of sense.
It makes sense. I think I could see why it's still a frustration, though, for sure. But Deb, what frustrated you? What didn't make sense for you about The Last Starfighter?
Okay, not that it didn't make sense, but I just don't like that. It's a personal preference. Mm. When they showed Beta's changing face, you know, and the my poor kids, they okay, hide your faces right now.
Part's terrifying. That's a nightmare.
It really is super scary.
Growing up, that was the scariest part for me. Yeah.
I thought, you know, they could have handled that differently. And even now I'm like, oh, I don't like this scene. So that would be my tragic.
It doesn't help that they have a music sting to it too, like to jump scare you.
They do.
The scene is great, but it is jarring because it's so much different than any other part in the whole movie.
Yeah. Exactly, you know? Exactly.
And that is not what you're expecting when that blanket gets pulled back.
No. I'd rather see that than his little brother with his Playboys underneath that blanket, though.
Yeah,
yes. That's hard. Yeah, absolutely. Paul, what was your tragic maker?
My tragic maker is unfortunate because I'm going to talk about what makes one of the things that makes this movie great is that it was the first movie to use computer generated graphics other than showing computer generated graphics, meaning like there's something on a screen that's computer generated. So here it is. They actually use computer generated graphics for a scene like for the cars flying or for the spaceships.
Okay.
And Francisco has a confused look on his face. So I'll pause for a moment.
Aren't all movies with computer generated things having it up on screen? No.
Like on a computer screen.
When they're talking to the Genesis, like when Star Trek is talking about how Genesis is formed, they're looking at a computer screen and they're showing a simulation on a screen.
They use
computer graphics for that.
Gotcha.
This movie was the first to use computer graphics for an actual scene that's supposed to be photorealistic scene, for the cars
as
or for the ship.
As opposed to Intron, which is in a computer, so that's a little different.
Right.
Okay.
Okay, are you following?
Yes.
Okay. Unfortunately, when watching it in today's standards, it feels like you're watching a movie and then all of a sudden it switches to a loading screen for a PlayStation 2 for a bit as you watch
these.
Did you
watch this on 8K again, Paul?
You know, but what's sad is like even at the time, they could have done even higher resolution images, and they calculated it out, and they said, how long would it take? And they did the math, and they said it would take 17 months to render all the images to get it right. But they only had 6 months before the film came out. So to cut corners and make... Yeah, it could have been better. To make the deadline, they lowered the polygons and they cut corners in different areas. So as
that hurts.
Yes. And unfortunately, I think historically this film suffers because of that. Even though historically this film is great because it is the first to use computer generated images in the way that it did, but it wasn't what it could have been, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And it does, like Zabe said, it's going to be some people's, and it's my tragic maker. It's like the worst thing about this film is also one of the, like I said, one of the best things about this film. So
that's fair. That's very fair. My tragic maker, I'll end it here, is unlike any others of yours, I should say. Paul, do you remember what was the movie where I thought it would have been better if the dog died? Do you remember what movie that was?
There's a lot of them.
You always wish the dog is dead, Francisco.
Yeah, you raise the stakes. Introduce a dog, kill it. Introduce Alex's best friend, kill it. Raise the stakes.
Who this movie needs? A dead dog.
Yeah. I forget which movie that was, but regardless.
But I do too.
Okay.
There's been so many. I don't remember which
there probably
one.
Have been more than one. Okay, so this is kind of on par with that, but not really. I'll explain. So, I forget what the aliens that are the assassins are with the eyes on right next to their mouths.
Xandozans.
Thank you. So the first one that comes out there is looking for the beta unit, not Alex. He doesn't know it's the beta unit, but Alex goes to, or I think it's the beta unit actually. The beta unit goes to the arcade. Actually, I don't remember if it's Alex or the beta unit. It doesn't matter.
Hey, one of them. Yes. Your story is getting slow and boring.
Get to the point.
Okay. The Alex or Beta goes up to the arcade. It's like glitching out and he can't figure it out. He's like looking at it for, I don't know, solid 5-10 seconds. And then he feels like this drip.
Right, they
on
both
him.
Do.
Okay.
They both do. I think Alex and Beta.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was just one of them. Well, regardless, one of them feels a drip on him and looks up and there's the Xandozan clawing at him. I'm sorry, Xandozan. You have a firing pistol with optimal firing line right down into Beta or Alex's head. What the junk are you doing not just using that right there and then? You could have ended this whole issue and given glory to the Empire, getting paid millions of credits. But no, you want to claw at him like a dog. What's wrong with you?
Kill the dog?
Yeah. Yes. Kill the alien dog, Xandozan. Yes. Go ahead,
everybody knows that because Xandozans have eyes so far apart like that, that they're things up close to them that they can't see. They're like a hammerhead shark.
Yeah.
They have a blind spot right in front of them.
Oh, does so everyone they're know this?
Wait for long distances.
No,
you
it
guys,
makes
you guys
sense.
You got to go on this Last Starfinder wiki page. And you guys can catch up with me.
That makes sense. Oh, so he didn't know where to aim. So he was clawing at him to pull him forward to shoot him.
Why would he pull him forward if he can't see him close?
So he could shoot him at close range. So this.
It's either point blank or far away.
Yeah.
No in between.
That makes you wonder why they're picked as the assassin.
Yeah. Also, you know, I bet Zur picked him. I bet Zur was like, oh, I got these guys. They're great. Just dial them up. So
that's the best line of the podcast right there. Congrats. Nice.
Rah. Okay. So that is my tragic maker. But now,
good point.
Yeah, that Alex didn't die. That's my tragic maker. Now that we've entered all our trajectories into the firing computer, Travis, do you have a firing solution for us?
Firing solution complete. Salvo authority accepted. Ratings prepared to launch.
Oh, Francisco.
Yeah.
The Salvo authority. It's been almost 300 episodes. I think this movie helps me understand what that finally means. Because in this movie, it says,
all guns. Fire!
That's what the Salvo Authority is, right?
Kind of, yes, except...
Kind of, no.
Except it's salvo at the ready. I just gave you a little, like, hat tip to you what to have Travis say salvo authority. But it's always and ever will be salvo at the ready. Like so a I'm salvo right, of
I'm
missiles.
Wrong. I'm even more confused now.
Ready to fire.
Okay, just go on.
Move along. Move along. All right. So do we rate The Last Starfighter a classic? We'd recommend anyone go see this film, whether or not they've seen it before. A nostalgic, it's definitely worth a rewatch if you remember liking it as a kid or a young adult. But if you haven't seen it before, skip it. Or do we rate it a tragic? It's not worth anyone's time today. If you've never seen it before, definitely keep it that way. And if you have seen it before, don't sully any good memories you have of it with a rewatch. So let's start with Deb. You had, everyone had predicted classic except for me, but Deb, what was your final rating for The Last Starfighter?
My final rating is still classic.
What? Why?
Despite all the, well, like I said, it brings back personal memories, so yeah, I have to say classic.
Of course. No, I totally nostalgic. Get that. I told you.
It sounds nostalgic, but it's classic.
All right. I like that.
Just like my marriage, classic.
Oh. Aww.
Suzanne, how about you?
What's diarrhea.
Oh, my gosh, Paul. Suzanne?
You know, I really thought long and hard about this. Because it's difficult to rate something. You got to, like, set down your bias, right?
Yeah.
And well, I enjoyed
you
it.
You don't
so much
necessarily have to, kid. But yes.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's true. You don't have to. But I was trying to consider from outside perspective. But, you know, I still arrived at classic. I think what pushed me over the edge, I think it's close. I think it's close. Mm-hmm. But I think what pushed me over the edge towards classic was, again, my favorite thing. It just is that it's so fun, like the entertainment value sort of drove it over the top, and you know that who doesn't want a good time at the movies, which is becoming farther and few between these days, with even the amount of movies that are being released.
Yeah,
so I don't know. I just think it's still classic. It's still a good time. It's still a fun.
So, awesome.
Classic.
Awesome. Zabe, how about you?
So I pre-rated this as classic.
Mm-hmm.
I got to tell you, after watching it again recently, and especially after talking to all you guys, I got to say it's classic. Wholeheartedly.
I mean, yay.
So here's my thoughts. Even if you point all of our tragic makers, put them all together, and there's plenty of reasons why you can throw rocks at this movie.
Mm-hmm.
If you like filmmaking, if you like storytelling, if you're into the movies as a genre, you have to appreciate where it came from, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this movie is a forebearer of so much that has come after it that there has to be an appreciation there.
Yeah.
And it goes beyond just being nostalgic for things that when you were a kid. So I think people today could watch it and still gain good insight from the past and gain some nice enjoyment from what is currently still available.
Awesome. So classic for Zabe. Paul. So our reflex capacitors, it seemed like no one has seen this movie in quite a long time, so we didn't get any votes. So Paul, what do you rate The Last Starfighter?
I predicted classic and I agree with everybody so far. It's been a fun trip. I'd recommend this. If you haven't seen this before, I would say put it on your to see list, but remember this is a small movie. So keep your expectations small. If you go in thinking, oh, the Retro Rewind, all these people said it was great except Francisco. So I'm gonna see what they're talking about. I'm looking forward to this. And you have these great big expectations. It's not that kind of movie. You're going to be disappointed. But
it's not going to change your life, but it's still a fun time watching a movie.
Right.
Right.
If you haven't seen it, I'm not saying like you have to put it on right now to watch it. It's a must. Yeah. But I am saying if you haven't seen it, and you have a free afternoon, whatever, I would recommend you watching it, definitely.
All right, classic for Paul. All right, you bunch of softies. Golly sakes. Classic, classic, classic. Well, here. Here's Francisco with the hard truth. Yeah, it's a classic also. I'm not as enamored, maybe. Well, I think we all have different levels of why, where we, how we rate this a classic. But I mean, really, I think if you, you can easily put aside the subpar effects, and really these characters are really enjoyable to watch. They work well together. There's this growth that the character has, albeit some of it's forced upon him and not this internal motivation, which, yeah.
And shamed about. Upon him.
And yeah, exactly. But I think so much of this movie works, and it was fun to watch. And I enjoyed myself watching it. So, yeah, classic for me as well. So, according to the Retro Rewind podcast, we rate The Last Starfighter a unanimous classic film. We'd recommend anyone go see this, whether or not you've seen it before.
Good show, Starfighter.
Wow. But now it's time to stick around 1984 and see where you can all find us.
Return to 20XX overridden. The ComSAS broadcasting while awaiting return coordinates.
Feels good to still be in 1984, but we wouldn't have been able to travel back, travel here to begin with if it weren't for our amazing reflux capacitors, namely Deborah Powers. Oh, you're right here! Woohoo! Geek Devotions, Drew of the Cellcast, Ashley Ruiz, Kennethan, Fabius Lomax, Rosie Lomax, That's Our Babo, D Tungsten, Dale, Mr. Lost, Gerald Hafner, Cool Deluxe, Dustin, Redeemed Otaku, in addition to two other awesome patrons as well. Thank you all so much for keeping the gigawatts coming. And if you want to help keep us flying and get bonus content for your generosity, head over to RetroRewindPodcast.com/support to start.
And speaking of wars that are fought amongst the stars.
Strong with the Force, this stream is. Sponsored by PaulJPowers.com, it must be.
Wow.
Yeah. So, what was that?
I said I love that.
Yeah.
Visit PaulJPowers.com, you must. Yes.
Okay, Yoda.
Get the point.
So, Francisco. Oh, by the way, and thank you to all the supporters. We really appreciate all your support. Mm-hmm. So, Francisco, is there a way for people to support the show without taking a dip in their bank account?
Yeah. Actually, if you're like saving up for Gunstar, maybe. Or Tron Arcade, you could probably a free way to support this episode is to, if you're not driving, share it with a friend. Tap the share icon on your podcast player, and yeah, send this episode to a friend saying, "Hey, I know you like The Last Starfighter or sci-fi movies, so I thought you might like this podcast about it."
Cool, and I'll bet they'll thank you for it.
They will, and they must.
And okay,
or
you'll be shamed into it. But speaking of thanking people, we want to give a big Gunstar hug. That's not deadly, but just like, well, it's so big, like a love blossom, not a death blossom, but a love blossom hug. To our to everyone who came to help us review this movie. We'll start with my mother. Thank you for coming, and
you're welcome.
We usually ask where people can find you online if you want to let people know.
You can find me through your information.
Through RetroRewindPodcast.com.
That's
which
it.
You can get there through PaulJPowers.com.
Indeed.
And thank you. So next we'll go to Zay. Where can people find you online?
Why don't we go to Suzanne, because S is before Z?
Sure.
You go out the order, PaulJPowers.com.
I'm sorry. I was following your notes, Captain.
You always change it to be alphabet.
All right. Thank you, Suzanne. For coming and sharing your thoughts. You want to tell people where
it was my pleasure
can find you if they're looking, or if they want to say hi.
You know, you can't really find me anywhere these days. I'm
excellent.
I'm off of social media, a lot. I'm a student now, so I just don't have time.
Yeah. Nice.
But just like your mom, I do have a husband who's coming up next, and he's got a lot to say, I'm sure, about where you can find him.
All right, husband, thank you for joining us.
AKA so Zabe. Yeah, okay,
cool. Yeah, where can people find you online? Is there anything cool you got going on that people should know about?
Well, first, I want to say thanks to you two guys. I'm so blessed and happy to have made friendships with you over the last year and a half now.
Likewise.
So happy to be able to come back on your podcast and share my memories of this rad movie with you guys. It's a total blessing to me. And thanks for having my wife on, too. She always makes everything a little bit better. I have a podcast as well. It's a Gen X trivia game show where we take two best friends and we pit them against one another. And there's a fun prize at the end for whoever can beat the other person. It's a good-hearted look back into the cool things of our youth. You can find me at whowillsavegenx.com. Right? Yeah.
You sure?
I'm sure.
Okay.
I don't really direct people to my podcast that much. Like, I mean, believe it or not, I mean, if anyone knows someone has a podcast, they're always in your face, listen to my podcast. But, you know, I kind of stay on the fly under the radar a little bit. But whowillsavegenx.com is the website. And come check us out. It's a good time. It's made by Gen Xers for Gen Xers, but you don't have to be a Gen Xer to love it. It's a good time. And you can find Paul and Francisco. They were actually on one episode. So take a look for them, and you'll enjoy it if you enjoy this podcast as well.
Awesome. And we're hoping to be back at some point in the near future as well.
Oh, I hope so. Yeah, you guys are awesome. And the episode you guys were on was one of my favorites. So I'd like to get a repeat. We won't say who won between the two of you. We'll keep that a secret.
I'm sure the people can figure it out.
Yeah, they can. Can't they, Paul?
Why were you so silent there, Francis?
Darn Pat Morita still curses me to this day. Well, I knew he was on Happy Days, Not Taxi. Anyway, sorry, having flashbacks. But yeah, thank you so much, Zabe, Suzanne, Deb, my awesome co-host, Gunstar Hero, Paul, and all you Rewinders new and old for another fun voyage.
You're welcome. And you can find me, pauljpowers.com, at pauljpowers.com.
And you can find me on our Discord for show announcements or just to say hi. Join us there at retrorewindpodcast.com/discord.
This podcast is a proud member of Culture Box, a curated collection of podcasts, videos, and articles that will provide you a balanced meal of content. You will find culture celebrated for its past and future, satirized for its extremes, explored in study, and created anew in story. Point your web browser to culturebox.media.
As the floating head of the disobedient child just said, we are now part of Culture Box Media Network. Find all the shows unpacking truth through story, comedy, geek, and geekery at culturebox.media.
Thank you, XO, and thank you all for listening. We pray you are more joyful today than when you first hit play, but like a Pokemon, we gotta catch you all for the next episode of the Retro Rewind Podcast.
Rewinders of the Lost Spot mission complete. Review audio ship's logs for more details.
Report. Guidance system out. Auxiliary steering out.
Divert! Divert!
She won't answer the helm. We're locked into the moon's gravitational pull. What do we do?
We die.